Tonight on the Goblin's Corner.
Author Kira Lee.
That's how we roll.
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 Welcome to the Goblin's Corner. My name is Eric.
And I'm Matt.
And tonight,
we're talking to author Kira Lee.
That's right. Author of Constellus Voss, an anime-inspired psychological sci-fi trilogy. And we're going to get her to talk a little bit more about this wonderful book, as well as talk a little bit about some games. So, Kira, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, we've got a little bit of an overview of your novel, and I'd like you to talk about it. So, we have long after humanity reached the stars and recreated Earth and all its vices, one totally unhinged man finds himself lost, not only in a robotic body, but in the chapters of his prior life. So, tell us a little bit about Constellus Voss and maybe how you came about creating it.
Sure. So I have a tendency to be long-winded, but I will make an effort not to. I'm 33, was deeply inspired by, you know, Sunday and Saturday morning sci-fi channel anime series, cyberpunk, stuff like this, Eerie, Aeon Flux. And I found as time went on, that type of media wasn't common anymore, if you know what I'm saying. The old school, like gritty adult sort of fantasy sci-fi storytelling. So I got older, I got into freelancing. I went from being an artist to being a freelancer in design, actually, web development. And then I thought, gosh, I really love writing. I really love creating characters. I really love that type of storytelling. And science fiction offers the ability to explore not only what could be possible, but make comparisons to contemporary life. So I wrote a trilogy, sat on it for quite some time, and then COVID hit and I thought, well, I probably should produce this because the world was kind of on fire.
Sure.
So yeah, so I put it out there and, you know, was inspired by the media of my youth, more or less. Does that answer the question?
It does. Yeah,
absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about the world that your unhinged man lives in.
Yes. I will try to avoid spoilers and be as explanatory as possible. So I'm not sure if listeners or either of you are into this, but there was a period of film where science fiction and dystopic media was kind of absurd, like with Brazil.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like absurdism.
Terry Gilliam.
Where,
love
him. Yes. Right? Where, like, the future is not going to be clean, pristine, and uniform. It's going to be like garbage on top of garbage and like bureaucracy and things that don't make any sense because humans are messy, emotional, nonsensical creatures. So that's kind of the world. It's like an alternative universe future where this robot dude has a personality from the 90s. It's alternative. Like, we're going to play a little fast and loose with realism here.
Sure.
And he gets posited in the future, and it's basically just like Brazil plus anime and more absurd.
He's got his Nirvana shirt on. He's ready to party.
Yep. And he's like, can I swear? Like, can I use the F word?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. He's like, where the fuck am I? Like, that's the culmination is you rip somebody out of that type of time period and fling them into absurd, ridiculous, dystopic, nonsensical space future where technology is very powerful, but basically nobody knows how to use it. Because they don't have to.
I'm sensing a lot of Stranger in a Strange Land, Yankee in King Arthur's Court / Douglas
yes.
Adams vibe.
Yep. So, you know.
But with a mid-90s soundtrack.
Sure.
Yes.
I'm with it.
It's got the Captain Marvel soundtrack to it. I'm digging everything about this now.
Thank you. I actually really love the Captain Marvel soundtrack. Like, Hole and... what else was on there? It wasn't just Hole. I want to say there was a garbage song.
Soundgarden, I think, was on there. Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah.
For our younger listeners, these were bands. They were good band. We lived through these episodes as well, dating ourselves here.
Yeah, no, I music is a big inspiration. So I don't know if this is relevant or helpful or wonderful. I'm not sure. Basically, every chapter of this story was written to a song that is either 90s inspired, has a touch to the genre, or is like goth 80s music. So I like, I went whole ass with it, like Sisters of Mercy and everything.
So your playlist, Matt.
Yes, basically.
Yeah, everything yeah.
She hacked into my computer and played my personal playlist. Got it.
How dare you? How dare you?
That's great. That's great.
I have a cleric t-shirt that says reach out and touch faith. So.
Oh, that's beautiful. Are we mindless self-indulgence fans as well?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. You're my new favorite. Thank you.
Oh, well, our second question, which you've already touched on, is where do you draw inspiration from creatively? Now, clearly you draw inspiration from fantastic music, obviously. So, and obviously your Aeon Flux and your completely ridiculous cartoons, which are also great because
of
that.
Let me tell you something. Yes. Liquid Television was way underrated, all right? Everything that came out of that was awesome. The Head, you guys remember The Head?
Yes.
TV's The Head. It was this alien that lived inside this guy Roy's head, and his head was gigantic.
Oh yeah, that was
weird. So weird.
Yeah, no, I remember that. Yeah, so it, you know, Constellus Vos was inspired by that time period where media was allowed to break a lot of rules, because even though we have like a long lineage of media doing, you know, wacky kind of out there stuff, because I'm majorly inspired by anime and cartoons, comic books, video games, people were just like throwing things at the wall, like in the 90s. They were just like, does this fit? Does this work? We got some pretty out there stuff like Akira and Ghost in the Shell. So I kind of am inspired by that because I want to return to when I think media was a bit less safe and like didn't hold your hand, if that makes any sense.
A little less preachy too, if I recall.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a bit preachy, but like, you know, irreverently so.
Right. And I think the other thing is you could put something on TV that wasn't guaranteed to make $1 billion. Right. And that's,
yes.
And right now everything is just spinoffs from something or remakes of something, or if it's not guaranteed to make $1 billion, nobody's interested.
Exactly.
As far as the companies go. Yeah. I'm with it.
Wasn't always a marketing calculation.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm in marketing. So, I wanted to make something I hadn't seen in a very long time. So because even though I am an artist and I paint and I draw, and I had art shows all over the place, like about 10, 15 years ago, I don't know how to animate and I have no idea how to work with film. So I decided to write, and that's where the story comes from, because for lack of, I guess, a better explanation, like I just don't have the skills to make what I would want to see on television.
I get it. I am someone who has zero graphical artistic ability, so I 100% can understand that.
He's the true storyteller. I'm the guy that I've got literally some paintbrushes right in front of him right now.
Right.
I mean, art is just a sort of a language, you know, like anything that you can apply skill to, like you can inevitably make something out of that. And I apologize if you're hearing my cat, but I've locked him behind like four doors and he's still meowing.
It's all right. We've got cats. We get it.
Okay.
So Kira, you could have chosen any genre, right? And there's lots of different genres out there. I mean, anything from fantasy to hard science. What is it about sci-fi in general that speaks to you? And specifically like the type that you're doing for your book, like why that genre over, say, like a space opera or you know, like a fantasy style novel?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm partial to it because even though I'm a big fan of fantasy, like I've run fantasy role-playing games and it's a really enjoyable genre, you kind of have to have the suspension of disbelief and like, oh yeah, this is how magic works. And it ends up being less psychological than like, how do we apply fantastical principles to things that relate to human beings, not on like a metamagical level, but on a, is this possible level? I don't know if that quite makes sense, but sci-fi was always that genre where you could play fast and loose. And if you wanted to get technical, you could, but it was more so about the human condition than it was about like anything else, I guess. I'm a big Deep Space Nine person, so that's kind of where the sci-fi comes from. I hope I'm answering this question. Okay.
You are.
Yeah, it's all about, it's funny. We talk a lot about like when you're building characters and when you're playing or running games. And that's one of the things that we talk about is like, make it about your players. Nobody cares about the MacGuffin, whatever that happens to be, right? The big thing that's going on in your world. It's good for theater of the mind. But after that, the story is about the people. And I think that you hit the nail on the head with that.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I'm not a huge lore person. I enjoy it. But I mean, really good characters can carry a lot of, I guess, literary art or artistic flubs. If you have characters people love, then that can kind of make everything work.
And even if they're slightly despicable, people can love. I mean, that's why Game of Thrones was so popular, right? Because all of those characters, even the dastardly ones, had that human element to them. Right. Same thing with, and you mentioned Deep Space Nine too. Like, you know, there are parts of it where I was just like, Sisko, you're such a dick,
right?
You know, like the kid just wants to play ball. Stop being a dick, you know. But then but that is like that human element of things where he does what he has to do.
Yes, exactly.
Matt's nodding and smiling. I don't think he's watched DS9.
I've probably seen like a handful of episodes.
It's okay. I'll sit you down. I'm gonna strap you in a chair one day and make you watch it.
Yeah.
What about Farscape?
I have watched 90% of Farscape.
And you should.
Yes.
Because there's nothing better than a turtle, alien looking thing flying a ship.
He's great.
Sure.
Pilot. Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And I agree.
It's got Henson Studios in it, man. Anything right. Muppets.
Well, you and let's be honest, it was made by Henson, so therefore I've seen it.
That's I can totally believe that.
All right. So you did touch on the fact that you've played some tabletop RPGs. Now, that is what we and our show kind of specialize in. The storytelling side of it. What have you played?
It's mostly homebrew. If I had to explain it to you, it's my friend from Germany, my friend from Turkey sitting down, getting together on Discord and like having adventures where we hide from zombies underneath boxes and like roll dice to right on top of weasels to the next town. So that's like as far as I've gotten on that aspect. I'm mostly the BBS form type of storytelling role-playing gamer.
Nice. Now, I will tell you, there is a game that you are going to want to pick up a copy of just to read, because I feel like you will fall in love with it.
Tell me more.
It is called Hole.
Oh, Human Occupied Landfill? Yeah.
It's Human Occupied Landfill. And because you like that anime garbage on top of garbage style of writing, Hole was written in the mid to late 90s, and it's literally a garbage on top of garbage style game making fun of the popular games at the time.
It's totally not serious at all. It's very like, what is it? Like kind of Tank Girl-esque, you know what I mean?
It is. Like if Tank Girl met Hunter S. Thompson, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, very gonzo.
Oh, that's lovely.
It's ridiculous. You'll love it.
The skills in it are things like my voice is more important than God, stabbing things that scream and bleed, right? Like, so
That's beautiful.
Oh, it's ludicrous and wonderful. You haven't actually played any of the traditional style role playing, like your Dungeons and Dragons, your Middle Earth,
Shadowrun,
which is something else you would probably enjoy.
Yeah, she would love Shadowrun or Cyberpunk. She would love.
I would definitely like Cyberpunk, because I don't want to go on a tangent, but I was really disappointed with the video game, like in a big way. So I would like to play the source material to fill that void in my heart.
Yeah, don't. The game is, I played it. It's not great. Cyberpunk's pretty fun. Traveler she'd probably enjoy as well, although it's a little old school. It's a lot more.
Mechanically in depth for no reason.
We did a space game set a couple of episodes ago. So,
yeah. So speaking of Shadowrun, are you aware of that game or what the premise of it is?
I am aware of it, but yeah, you're mostly talking to a tertiary noob in a lot of these things. Tell me what you want to talk about.
There's nothing wrong with that. No, it's basically fantasy meets cyberpunk.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I want to get involved in that. Obviously, it's one of the reasons why I was super excited to be on this podcast. I just might have missed the curve, I guess, and just hopped into like being a GM for forum role-playing games.
Well, one of the things we always say is it doesn't really matter what you're playing, because all of these games, regardless of the theme, is all about collaborative storytelling. And that's one of the things we love about it. You know, it's like, obviously people play D&D. Obviously people play, you know, Deadlands or Shadowrun or any of the other games that are out there that most people recognize if you're in this whole thing. But a lot of people who have never played anything might pick up, what's that game? Monster Hearts.
Or,
yeah, so you might pick up Monster Hearts at a party, play a little bit of that for an hour and dive in, or even some of the card games that are sort of storytelling related, like Munchkin or.
Oh, I love Munchkin. Munchkin was great.
Dark Overlord.
Have you seen I, Dark Overlord?
I haven't, but I have played Munchkin.
Yeah, Munchkin's fun. You can. So yeah, those are like ways to get into this stuff. And all it is, you know, sitting around with a bunch of people, whether online or in person, hopefully someday in person.
Oh, right.
It'd be nice. And just telling a story. Everything else is secondary, right? It doesn't matter about the rules. You can play with them or you don't. And the fact that you're making something and homebrewing that stuff says a lot, right? It means that the story is more important than the rules. And that's, I find that very interesting.
In fact, in the beginning of every good role-playing book, the golden rule is remove any rule that is not fun for you and your group.
Definitely. Definitely. It is one of the reasons why I gravitated towards running the forum games, because if I'm upfront, the earlier tabletop stuff, I did try. I was pretty young. And like they made me use a prefab character. And then I kind of didn't pick it up for a really long time because I didn't have any creative freedom. And that made me really sad.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because we get a lot of people writing in and stuff to the show about, you know, I wanted to get into it, but I had a bad experience.
Yeah.
And this is a perfect example of, you know, one bad experience may put you off an entire fun set of media.
Yeah.
I'm interested, like, because you are running and you're doing storytelling yourself, you know, for fun. Mm-hmm. How does this affect storytelling professionally now as a writer?
What do you mean?
Do you draw any lessons from the games that you've played? Or does it make you think about writing in a different way because you are collaboratively storytelling as opposed to, you know, just yourself being the creator of something?
Oh, yes, definitely. So something I've noticed in storytelling, I'm super picky as a reader. and as a writer, but more so as a reader. I want to know what the other characters are feeling, thinking, their motivations. I want to be able to understand the other characters more than just quote unquote NPCs in a story. So collaborative storytelling, I think, requires you to, when you do collaborative storytelling, there's not just one protagonist. There's not just one main character. So that informs the way I write, because I feel like every character is valuable, flawed, important, and vulnerable and interesting. I think a lot of modern media likes to position on one character versus exploring the breadth of different characters who may even be more interesting than the protagonist. So definitely learn that lesson by doing collaborative storytelling, that characters should be human and you should be engaged in all of them, not just one of them.
Makes sense. Everybody's their own hero. Everybody's a villain to somebody. Like, everybody's got a story. So, I mean, that makes perfect sense.
And you can tell, too. Like, you can tell when, like, you watch a movie or something like that. You can tell, like, someone got sloppy writing where they just wrote a one-dimensional character.
Definitely.
And nobody cares about it.
I'm the perky office male guy.
Yeah. I mean, it's helpful sometimes because you do need some of those, I guess, filler or fluff characters. But that's why tropes become difficult, because I think that people use them to the point of thinking it's a stand-in for actually writing. And that's when, like, writing gets really sloppy.
I want to write a book of nothing but tropes.
You should do it.
Literally just trope the crap out of it.
I've probably read a couple books that were just nothing but tropes.
And that's what I worry about. I worry about ending up with the Crimson Emerald.
You might want to go a little bit into explanation on what you just said.
Oh, sorry. There was a book that was written many moons ago called The Crimson Emerald that won. So we go to a convention called Dragon Con.
Mm-hmm.
And they celebrate a great deal of fandoms, but one of the things that they are known for doing is basically the worst book of the year.
Mm.
And this isn't, you have to understand that this is not a person making a choice. This is literally a large group of people voting on it.
Mm.
So this yearly prize went to a book called The Crimson Emerald, which was so bad that it won the prize, the yearly prize, for multiple years running.
Oh.
I kind of wonder if that was purposely done, though. Kind of like the worst horror movie ever made,
right?
That movie, which if you haven't, that's actually, if you're listening, that's actually a movie called The Worst Horror Movie Ever Made. And my best friend actually sat down and watched the whole 2 hours of the movie, which nobody else in the room could watch because it was a challenge to him.
Some people are stubborn that way.
He stubbornest man I ever met.
I mean, I'd probably love to watch it, to be honest, but
oh, it's
awful.
Yeah. But awful good.
As people who don't know, that's the thing. As if we are people who don't mind awful movies, if they reach the point of awful where they can be enjoyable, this goes back beyond that point.
We used to do a bad movie night at my house, where we'd get all of our friends together, kind of a mini party. We'd sit down, we'd try to find the worst movie we could find.
And we succeeded.
And we would MST3K it, where we'd just riff on it the whole night. And it was wonderful. And then one of our friends brought this movie up. It was that and Cannibal the Musical. And we watched Cannibal the Musical, and that was delightful. And then we watched this movie, and it was just like, oh God, I got to go outside. I can't. I'm sweating. I feel physically ill to make myself through that. And I love, like, you know, I'm old Godzilla movie fanatic, and I like the cheese movies, right?
Yeah.
No, I couldn't do this. But he watched every single minute of that. Sat there glaring at it until it was done. That's dedication right there.
You will not defeat me, garbage movie.
Right.
You mentioned you are an artist. What kind of medium do you paint primarily?
I was traditionally trained in oils, but I kind of use anything. If I had to be honest, that my favorite medium is gel pens, and that sounds completely bonkers. And currently, I've been doing a lot of digital art just because it's easier.
I can believe that.
Yeah. Less cleanup than oils.
Good gel pen is nice, though. You can definitely rock that out.
Yeah.
I never got a chance to mess with a lot of oils. I should probably do that sometime. I mostly do acrylic myself.
I enjoy acrylic, but I don't know. Like, I feel like it can be less forgiving and yet at the same time more forgiving than oils, and that might not make sense, but I think it's legit.
No, that's actually, yeah, because if you have decent acrylic paint, then it flows very well, and with a little bit of like high gloss, it really looks like oil. Mm-hmm. But if you have some crap acrylic paint, then you're basically smearing chalk that's wet onto a canvas.
Yeah.
I've experimented with both of those types, and those little mistakes teach you.
Yeah, it's night and day, honestly. Yeah, I mean, I have a drawing tablet now, but I think gel pens are where it's at, especially if they're, you know, light fast, color fast, and they have pigments that you can't really get on the monitor unless you have a really nice monitor, that of which I don't have.
So I love art. I'm not somebody who gets to indulge in, well, I could indulge in it. It just won't do what I want it to do. So I love, cause I checked out your page.
Oh, thank you.
And you've got, the trippy one with the pink knee high boots and the mesh shirt. That is super dope. That is fantastic.
Which page? Are you on the main site, Instagram, or the blog? I have like too many things. I make too much stuff.
Oh, I was your Facebook page. That's the first thing that came up.
Yeah.
I just Googled your name and that's what came up. But how much has anime kind of influenced your art, and what's your favorite anime for that?
I'm a big weeb, like up front. I'm a huge fucking weeb. So how much has it influenced my art? All of it. my favorite? I really like the original Ghost in the Shell movie, Akira, Perfect Blue, like anything from Satoshi Kon and Eerie, like stuff from that time period. So yeah, I mean, I'm all about anime that kind of pushes boundaries. I actually don't know if I'm answering the question.
mid 90s.
Yeah.
Keeping with the theme there, and all of which are exceptional animes as well.
Yeah, no, I love them. I think animation gives you a really interesting way to tell stories, because even though it's hard to animate, and even though of course it takes talent and like you have a budget, because it's a cartoon, I guess audiences are less likely to have trouble articulating if something is real or not. So you can kind of do whatever you want, which is really awesome.
That's cool. I hadn't really thought about it like that. So I had an interesting question that I came up with, and I've never heard it asked before, so I thought I'd ask. Oh. What question do you wish an interviewer would ask you, and what would the answer be?
What question do I wish an interviewer would ask me? That's hard. That's a really, really hard question.
That's right. We do hard-hitting journalism.
We're
going to
write
here.
It down, too.
Yeah, no, just give me a sec. I have to actually think about it versus just, like, vomiting words all over the place. I think it would change situationally based on, like, what type of interview I was doing. Since I'm in tech and doing podcasts for, like, gaming things, nerdy things, and storytelling is new for me. If it's storytelling, like, perhaps what is your favorite trope?
Okay.
Because I feel like a lot of people potentially just hate tropes when I think there's some merit to them. And then my answer would be the femme fatale, because I think that they're really fun. And I feel like it doesn't necessarily have to be a trope that is about the dangers of weaponized femininity. It can be something empowering. Yeah, so I guess that's my answer, is what is your favorite trope in writing and why?
My brain immediately went 1920s gumshoe. The femme fatale is the detective, though. Just put a spin on things. Like, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I actually really love tropes because I feel like, and I might get tangential, I'm so sorry for it. I actually really love tropes because I feel like you can break them if you're smart about it, and it gives another layer of like meta understanding to the story you're creating, like a little wink and a nod if, you know, the people engaging are savvy and they pick it up. It's really rewarding.
It's true. I actually had a very similar conversation with someone else, and that is, tropes allow you to do things to your audience that nothing else will, because your audience will fall into the rhythm of the trope. And once they're in the rhythm of the trope, you can go anywhere and they have no idea it's coming, because their brain is already in the rhythm of what they think is going to occur.
100%. It's psychological shorthand.
Yep.
Yeah. The tropes are basically
every great plot twist exists because somebody has fallen for the trope that comes before it.
100%. And I kind of love that. I think it's brilliant.
It's like an art. You have to know the rules before you can break the rules. And a trope is almost not really a rule, but a template that people instantly recognize.
Like, it's a societal norm.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, exactly. Designing for repetition or pattern. And then you can break that repetition or pattern and show something interesting with that.
Yep.
100%. And I think that's when storytelling gets really exciting, because you can kind of throw people off balance and maybe even get them to think about themselves, their life, and their ideas.
Absolutely. Well, Kira, we would love to talk to you more often, but we are running out of time a little bit. So maybe you can tell us and the people at home where they can find you and your wonderful book as well.
Sure. You can find me literally all over the internet. The website for my book is CONSTELISVOSS.ML. If you Google Kira Lee, KIRALEIGH, I'm on Medium, LinkedIn, Twitter, Reddit, kind of anywhere. Yeah. So if you Google me, you will definitely find me. I'm the first result.
And we'll post all of her media information that she provides as well on our website. So if you want to check out her book, which you should, yes, then you'll be able to do so.
Because it sounds awesome.
That's right. Well, Kira Lee, thank you so much for being on our show. It's been a pleasure to speak with you as well.
Thank you, too. I had a really good time. I think you're both really fun.
Well, thank you.
We try to be. That's all the time we have for tonight. Once again, my name is Eric.
And I'm Matt.
We'll see you next time.
The Goblin's Corner has been written and produced by Eric Holden and Matt Staple.
D20 did our music.
And this has been a Subterranean production.
Later.